Yeah, it's the Left for Ted podcast, and we don't have an opening this week. Woo!
Woo!
Because it's their time. Their time.
Up there!
Zomitia!
Down here, it's Zomitia! Our time! It's our time down here!
You say that I'm eccentric, but it's really kind of cool with me. The evening is electric, so let's play it for eternity.
This is our time to light up the sky. Dancing with the devil, because it keeps me alive. Hold your breath.
It's the Left for Ted podcast. What's up, guys? Hello? Anyone?
Yo.
Bueller? Bueller. Okay.
Yeah, hello.
Yo.
All right, so, like last week, there's only three of us, so it's kind of like the Left for Three podcast, or Left Three Ted podcast.
No, well, there's technically four.
Well, there's technically four. But he's not going to talk the entire time. So yeah, John's here, Ryan's here, I'm Ted. Chris is somewhere lurking in the background.
Are you?
Sometimes.
Are you? Okay. Sometimes you're Tank.
Chris is that weird guy in the porno jerking off in the corner. That would make a lot more sense if you were here an hour ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what's up, guys? How you guys doing?
Not too much. How about you?
Everything's fine. But, then we have phones going off. John, you might want to actually grab that mic, because apparently your voice didn't carry at all, looking at our waveforms.
I'm doing good, not too much. How about you?
Still not.
I picked up that little...
Hello.
There we go.
Third time's a charm. Not too much. How about you guys? How you doing?
I know that Ryan's having a bit of trouble on his Xbox right now. Possibly having a bit of trouble on the phone as well. But yeah, this is we're actually doing the podcast over Xbox Voice this time instead of Skype. So that's always. Weird experiment in what we do. And apparently John is Mitchell.
So it doesn't racially profile after all.
All that time we thought that it was because it was Nick.
Man.
I feel so bad.
I'm whiter than a snowman on a bukkake fetish, so if it could pick me up as Mitchell, I'm glad you got that, so...
Whiter than a snowman with a bukkake fetish. When somebody asked me to describe you, that's how...
Go for it.
Alright, yeah, this week, a lot of weird stuff has happened.
To say the least.
Might be a little bit, wrestling heavy, so for those of you that don't watch wrestling, don't know what we're gonna talk about, Just go back to Fox News and watch Nancy Grace.
And it might be morbid, too. I mean, like, how many deaths happen within the course?
Yeah. So, let's start this off with what I like to call TussleMania. It's our topic this week. Which is, any two people you'd ever want to see fight that don't have superpowers. So, John, you got anything?
Two people that didn't want to see fight that have superpowers.
Yeah, that don't have superpowers.
Could be anybody random.
Anybody. You want me to go first?
Yes, please.
Gandhi and Mother Teresa.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'd love to see her bitch smack Gandhi. I think that'd be hilarious.
I'd like to see if she can push Gandhi over the edge and actually, like, want to fight.
Oh, hell yeah. He pulls out some Dasim-type moves. Whenever I picture Gandhi, I picture Dasim first. I have no idea why.
I got one. How about Martin Luther King and Malcolm X?
Oh. A rumble in the jungle.
Well, to see if one is... Because one took the violent option, and one took the nonviolent. I'd like to see where that would go, where it's like Malcolm X tries to pull out all stops to see if like he could actually get Martin Luther King to fight him. Starts calling him an Uncle Tom and everything under the, you know, under the bridge.
Lots of racial slurs probably thrown out there.
I bet too, right?
Yeah.
I bet you'll say anything, like, and I bet you what you, I bet you Martin Luther King doesn't break for a little bit. They'd be like, fuck this.
Somebody throws a chair, and then it's on. Oh, Boondocks. Wait, where is our resident black guy that to tell us that everything's okay?
Well, apparently Ryan's not here.
Yeah. He must have taken the phone call or forgot to take his mic off of mute or something. I'm not sure.
Ryan.
Chris, if you're still there, do you have two people that you'd like to see fight? No? I'm wondering something. Chris, if you're there, sneeze. Well, you guys are now hearing Titanfall.
Yeah, right. Which, my first time seeing it, actually looks really cool, so...
Let's go into this.
Hey, guys.
So, yeah, still not sure what's going on. Okay, now that we got back on track. So, Ryan, any two people in the world that you would like to see fight? Alive or dead?
Jason David Frank and Jason Statham.
That's a good one.
Nice.
With you being the resident black guy, I said MLK and Malcolm X.
I think Malcolm X would take him in a fight.
Well, I was just curious to see, because I think Malcolm X might play mind games and see if he can actually get him, because, you know, his whole approach was nonviolent. I wanted to see if he could actually make MLK snap.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep going. So, next on our agenda, even though Mitch isn't here.
What's your favorite song? What's your favorite show? What's your favorite movie? 'Cause Mitchy wants to know. What's your favorite video game when you were six? This is Playing Favorites. This is Playing Favorites.
Playing Favorites.
Yeah, so, yeah, favorite side character. You know, not your main Spider-Man or Batman or Hellboy, what have you. Who's your favorite side character? Anyone? No one? Bueller?
Conrad Werner? No.
This is side character, not necessarily sidekick. Like, supporting character?
Right, supporting character.
Conrad Werner. Nice. Garrus Vakarian.
Ah, nice one. Trying to think of one. And all I keep thinking of is Carl Winslow. I don't know why, and I don't want to
Carl Winslow. Did I do that? See, I thought kind of long and hard about this one. And I would have to say, my favorite side character is the two voices inside Deadpool's head.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They're awesome. They are basically their own characters.
True. Ish.
I can't think of one. Well, these two appear top of my head. Both of them are for Pokemon. They could be rival slash side characters.
Yeah.
One of them is Wally, like one of your rivals.
Oh, God.
And just for the fact was, it was totally different because he just came off as this, like, no offense, anyone out there, like this, you know, sickly sissy kind of. And it was just...
It was different, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It was different from, like, your, you know, like, the douchey character, like the high school kind of douche jock that like Gary or, you know, Blue, as he wanted to call him, came off of, or as the or the other just I'm just evil for no reason kind of side character Silver was in Gold and Silver. Like, you had like
Brent. He was in Emerald, right?
Who, Wally?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was he Gen 3?
I think he was in Ruby and Sapphire too, along with Brendan or May, depending on which sex you picked. It was a totally different thing because he was that sickly, like I said, kind of like sissy boy who, like, you know, by the way, I envied him. He catched a Ralts on his first friggin' try and, you know, basically.
Yeah, right.
Basically finding.
He actually gets decent by the end.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, and that's where it's total took a 180. Like, when you face him at Victory Road, he just has this badass group of Pokemon out of nowhere. It's like, dude, I remember going to Mavella City and, like, you want to challenge the gym and I totally beat your ass. And now all of a sudden, what?
Yeah.
And the other one.
It's true, it's true.
And the other one was from the other gen, Barry. He's.
Oh, he was crazy.
Yeah, he was just a spaz. My favorite one was...
Yeah, he was a spaz.
I think my favorite thing from his was, we gotta get Pokeballs, you know, you gotta pronounce that, you know, with the hyphen at the end. It was like, shut up, Barry.
Oh, could I also add Piccolo from Dragon Ball?
Yes. Yeah, basically a side character?
Because, well, he started out the villain. He was a pretty bad villain. And, because he was basically pure evil karma given flesh. And after he got his ass kicked, he reincarnated himself, but he did it in the typical way of his people. And so he actually was born with a normal body that had a soul, even though it had all of his evil memories, which allowed for character growth, turning him from villain to rival to eventual father figure to the main character's kid. Actually, a better father than the main character was to that kid.
Well, that's because Goku was always dead. Talk about a deadbeat dad.
Even when he wasn't dead, though. Yeah, right?
You're absolutely right, right? He became kind of like the surrogate father to Gohan, which it was awesome seeing that character, just seeing this, like, this heartless bastard kind of, like, you know, grow up Gohan on, like, tough love, and then back to basically having, like, true feeling, you know, for the kid.
I think it really culminated, like, when the first thing he does when he trains Gohan is he throws him on a mountain, and he's like, learn how to use your powers mid-flight or die. And it kind of, I think, hits its apex in the Cell Saga when Goku's like, why isn't Gohan getting angry enough? And Piccolo starts to lecture him on parenthood. He's like, you don't understand your son's feelings. He doesn't understand why you're making him out be out there. Just sounded like he wanted to, like, adopt him from his stupid deadbeat cokehead dad.
You're absolutely right, though. Like you said, all he was going around is like, hey, Gohan, I love you, but time to save the universe again. See you later. And then you have Piccolo, like, oh, God damn it, I have to pick up the slack.
And no wonder Gohan got so strong in the Cell Saga. He had that whole android training period where he trained basically by getting his ass kicked by Piccolo and Goku.
Yeah.
Remember, they would just be, like, fighting and sparring, and then Gohan would jump in the middle, and somebody would, like, bitch-slap him?
And that delivered one of my favorite moments, though, was when friggin', during the whole, you know, when Vegeta and Nappa are about to come, and, you know, Gohan looks at the moon, and Piccolo blows up the moon. I'm like, yeah, because that wouldn't cause total tidal wave differences, and, you know, all that orbital thing, yeah.
Hey, it survived it after Roshi blew up the moon.
This is true.
I like how they did that in the Team 4 Star, where it's like Piccolo's just looking at the moon, and the moon looks back at him. He just looks at the moon looks back at him, and he's like, stop mocking me! Boom! And you know, I'll substantiate my Garrus pick, too, in that... One of the things I love about Garrus is that I wish Garrus got his own video game. Like, I'm hoping BioWare would give us, like, the Archangel Chronicles or something.
4.
That period between Mass Effect 1 and 2 where Garrus moves to a crime-infested Omega and just becomes Batman?
You know, I always wanted to argue about the three characters. Like, even if it was like a small, like, Blood Dragon type DLC, like, be like, one was Garrus. My other one was, I always wanted to do one with Kasumi with that whole, you know, with her boy toy and all that. I thought that would have been awesome gameplay. And the other one was the most badass character, Zahid Mesani. I would have loved to have a DLC with his mission story, especially one where he talks about getting choked out by a Hanar and almost dying because of it. Like,
you know? More side stories.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, Garrus, I think it was either a Cerberus or a Shadow Broker dossier in one of the games that suggests that Garrus can't reach his full potential while working under Shepard, simply because he's not Shepard and Shepard's in charge. But, like, what that kind of implied to me is that Garrus is almost equally as badass as Shepard, and the only reason he's not the main character is because he happens to exist under Shepard.
Yeah.
Like, really, any character from Mass Effect, like, I feel like when you pick up party members in most RPGs, it's either just, like, the group assembles, or you selected them, or they're just kind of bumbling along, or you rescued them. But everyone in Mass Effect has a badass backstory to begin with. Like, you rescue Garrus, and he's, like, executing those guys that were attacking the clinic. Like, he's already doing shit and going rogue already. And, like, to the point that if you don't recruit him, he still has his badass backstory in 2, where he went did all this shit on his own and still went and became Archangel, like, in the interim, instead of just being, like, Shepard died and so he went to do something. It was like, no, he still abandoned C-Sec and went and became a vigilante.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and Rex has all his war stories and even had that run-in with Saren.
I always found it interesting, though, too, how, like, and the first one was always the teacher-student relationship I always felt with Garrus and Shepard, and then I always felt it added a different layer onto it with, like, if you're Femship in the second one, if you decide to explore that romance option, because it kind of...
Oh, God.
...into much, much
more... My Femship went a little bit into it, and then echoing my own feelings on that was like, this is ridiculous, we just were friends.
Yeah, right.
Alright, so...
No, but I know you're... Like, especially in the first game where... Garrus just kind of feels like he wants to be Shepard, like, almost sidekick-ish, where it's like, he'll tell you a story, and then kind of like, so what do you think about that? And you can be like, you did the right thing, Garrus, or, you know, there's always other options.
Yeah. Or the whole
thing. Like, you always just have some comment, and it shapes his personality, kind of.
You're absolutely right, or the thing when we're talking about, I have a feeling we're never going to catch Saren. If we catch Saren, I say we kill him, so that way we don't let anything with C-Sec. Then you have, like, you know, this is what was awesome until, like, the third one took out the neutral spots. You had the Paragon. No, we have to, like, you know, let him, you know, we have to let the judicial system play out. Then the second, and then basically neutral option is, oh, whatever happens, happens, whether we get him or he dies, you know.
Yeah.
And then the total renegade option is, yeah, I totally agree with you. We can't let him, you know, after all the crimes he committed, we got to kill him. We can't let him hand him over to that, which I always thought was, you know, could shape either way. It's awesome, because I always felt like he was defiant towards that, especially if you pick the pick, because my first playthrough, I was totally Paragon. I picked the, no, we can, like, if we kill him, we'll be no much better than Saren, and I always thought Garrus had that whole, yeah, but look what he did, like, you know, like, what, you don't want to kill him? Like, I always thought that was interesting, that whole, you know.
I love how you can kind of shape him, too, like, you can spare, Saleon, right?
Yeah.
To have him, like, arrested. And, like, later when he's trying to kill Sidonis, you can warn Sidonis. And then you can, like, talk to Garrus after. And Garrus is kind of like, thank you, Shepard, you're right. You know, thank you for helping me remember who I am. And, like, his personality just seems like it's kind of following, like, a Paragon Shepard story arc. Or you can totally side with it and just, like, you're a renegade and Garrus is his renegade. And you guys are just fucking, just, you know. I feel like Garrus isn't so much a sidekick or a side character, but... To me, he's like my partner. I have him almost always in my party. And I don't consider him a sub-party member. It's just like, he's my best friend, and he's just as capable. When you have to have somebody lead the fire teams in the suicide mission in 2, like, I pick Garrus as, like, the commander when I'm not around.
I totally agree with you. Like, Him and, and to a lesser extent, Miranda were, like, the awesome choices for that. Like, whereas, like...
Yeah.
I don't know how the hell Jacob ever did anything to be a team leader, but that's another story for another time. But I agree with you.
I think I picked Grunt one time just for, like, that fortification bonus, but I was like, I get that Grunt can hit shit, but he doesn't have the experience to be commanding a fire team. Accessing tank memories. I think you should position here. Like, what the fuck does he know?
Or he can make the case for...
In the second game, by the third game, like, he's legit, like, leader of his own badass unit.
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
You, Ted.
I'm surprised nobody
Ted,
picked... No, I did. I said that the voices inside Deadpool's head.
Oh, Deadpool, duh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised that nobody picked Na'vi.
Hey, you listen.
Yeah, I'm listening. I've listened every single time. Now shut up.
Look.
Listen.
Hey!
Over there. I still love that VG Cats where it's just like Link in a sane asylum with like the wall scrawled in his own blood. Hey, look, listen.
It's kind of weird though. You guys were talking about like the FemShep having kind of female relationships sometimes. In a different podcast, not this one.
Obviously. Oh, FemShep gets all the good relationships. Like,
yeah.
Like I remember playing Mass Effect 3 for the first time, and you meet Yeoman Trainer, and I'm like, oh, she's pretty cute. I wonder if she's a romance option. But, it's like, haha, lesbian.
But no, yeah, you know the newest Pokemon with the X and Y, how you have kind of that that girl that's into you in Pokemon X and Y?
You talking about the 8-year-old who makes me feel super creepy every time I'm playing the game?
Exactly, yeah.
Could I have a romance with the rival girl? Like, she seems to be my character's age and skill level.
Yeah, guess what happens if you're a girl in Pokemon X and Y?
On you.
Same fucking thing.
Still has an interest in you?
Yep.
That's because, you know what, Japanese plus Nintendo, they probably didn't even notice what they were doing. It's probably just like, no, she's friends. She thinks you're cool. Yeah. It's like, no, she was very much pursuing the D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would probably be more obvious if, like, she turned into a little boy if you were a girl, and the little boy punched you and ran away.
Yeah, right?
I love you! Runs away.
It wouldn't surprise me if Game Freak, if it just went over their head, like, just the implications. They're like, wait, what, people? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know. Like, what are you talking about? She just wanted to be free. Oh.
Plus, Japan has slightly different standards for that, and lower ages of... I don't know if it's lower age consent, but I think it's like, as long as nobody's actually touching anybody, there are lower ages of... appropriateness? I don't know if I'm saying it right. Yeah.
No,
it's
no,
like this, you know, the way people can go date, like, schoolgirls, but, yeah. Like, not really. Like, you can't have sex with them, you can't prostitute, but you can, like, hire an escort, like, a 14-year-old schoolgirl just to, like, come with you to the mall. And you can, like, buy panties out of, like, a vending machine. Like, Japan's weird with... As long as you're not actually, like, whipping your genitals out, Japan is a lot more accepting with certain things.
Yeah, they're very... They lean... Yeah, you're right.
Utada Hikaru, anyone? 43-year-old fiancé at the time of making Simple and Clean, the theme song to Kingdom Hearts.
Hey, even want to go with that.
Japan is the country where somebody married his virtual girlfriend from a DS game.
Okay, then.
Hey, we want to go farther. Look at Sailor Moon and Tuxedo Mask.
You know what? You know what? Now's the time.
Tuxedo Mask is a goddamn pedophile.
Now's the time where we talk about people who have passed on. We like to call
Hold
this
on, no, I want so long, no, no, you don't so. Interrupt me here. Tuxedo Mask is a fucking pedophile. You can tell me all that you were guessed and shit. Why did he date Sailor Moon? That's playing me off.
No, you're right. She was 13 and he was like 32.
You can tell me the whole Serena thing because, you know, they were in another life, they were king and queen and had a kid. Okay. There's no excuse for him dating Ray.
But seriously, was that like the karma gods playing a sick joke? Like, we knew they were they're lovers and stuff. Let's resurrect them back in this other time age and stuff. But how about let's make them like 40 years older than she is? How funny would that be?
Yeah.
No, what was this? Might just be the dub because I haven't seen late Sailor Moon in Japanese. But did anyone else get the impression when Rini was involved that like Serena was legit like sexually jealous of Rini?
No, you're
absolutely... Like, it's like, what are you doing at Darien's apartment? What the fuck do you think she's doing? She's coloring, bitch. She's like five.
Yeah, you're absolutely...
Like, they played it like legit romantic jealousy.
You're absolutely right. He's like, what does he see in her that he doesn't see in me? I'm like, dude, chill out.
And then she would go somewhere and cry. It was crazy.
With this sad...
Like, I don't think... I know he kept trying to friendzone her because of his stupid dream, but I thought he was legit friendzoning her because she was acting like a paranoid bitch.
I was like 8 at the time.
Serena, calm down. She's 5 years old, he would say. And I'm like, yeah. Then I like remember his relationship with Ray, and I was like, wait, maybe she should be worried?
No, you're absolutely right, because I remember being 8 years old, watching it, being like slightly creeped out. Like, I'm not comfortable on what's going on here.
Slightly
yeah, like,
creeped out?
Yeah.
I'm sitting there watching in the living room, and my mom's in the next room, like having like you know this 30-year-old guy dating this 13-year-old guy, then her worrying about him putting the moves on this 5-year-old. I'm sitting there, I'm like, is this really something I should be watching? And like, can you imagine if my mom walked in, I'm like, what the fuck are you watching? Like,
actually, Ryan, doesn't this actually kind of fold into the conversation we were having on your Facebook earlier?
Parents yeah. Knowing what you're watching?
Yep.
Because I'm not going to lie.
Sailor Moon, don't do it, kids.
Because if I was my mom and my kid and I'm in the kitchen cooking something or something like that, and I'm like walking by and automatically hear this like subplot going on in the story, I'm like, what the hell are you watching?
I think it came up like once in the show too where like, oh, this is Darien. Uh-huh. And how old is he? He's in college.
Oh, her, his...
And then I was like...
Oh, I was ready for her dad to lay a smackdown on Darien's ass, because he was sitting there like, how old's he?
Right, can we talk about dead people
yeah,
now?
Let's talk about dead people.
Alright, dead people. First up...
Talk about fake pedophiles, man. The only, you know, only in Left 4 Dead, guys.
Yeah. And how outraged we are that they were...
Can we be outraged over how stupid Serena was when Zoisite spilled the secret?
Yeah.
She's like, my target is Tuxedo Mask, and Serena's like, Tuxedo Mask, but it's just Darien here. Then he had to pull a rose out.
Is that like the Japanese version of like Clark Kent, where everybody was in on the joke except for the characters?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, wow, Darien looks exactly like Tuxedo Mask if you put a tuxedo on him.
Well, let's be honest. In the new Superman, you know, Lois Lane is the only one who can figure out, you know.
I don't know. Everybody should know where he is. Like, when he sets her down, she's like, Clark! And then, did anyone notice? She then immediately has police officer drive her over to the Kent household where there is supervillain damage.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, let's not, you know. Let's not talk about that at all.
My theory is that he's a local... My theory is that he's something of a local legend. Like, after the bus incident and stuff. Like, yeah. Maybe they protect his secret, kind of. Like, everybody knows there's something up with Clark, but no one really talks about it.
Because it's really a small village.
Like, Buffy... Mm-hmm. Buffy did it the same way, kind of. You know, like, they all knew... They didn't know what the Slayer was, but... Remember at the graduation, they were like, Buffy, she saves us a lot?
Yeah, that was...
They gave her an award.
Season 1, right?
Season 3, wasn't it? It was at graduation.
Okay, yeah.
That's a good theory about Smallville, everyone kind of knowing, but like, yeah, whatever, it's Clark.
Yeah.
I think because I saw Joss Whedon do it kind of well, that's why when I was watching that movie, I was like, yeah, that would make kind of sense.
Yeah.
Then you have, like, Lois Lane people.
Like Pete, so when he crashed into the IHOP and Pete's looking right at him, you can't tell me, he's like, who is this strange alien, even though everyone in the comics does it, but I mean, like, realistically speaking, he'd be like, is that Clark in that weird getup, fighting at super speed? I always knew it, ever since he picked up a bus with one hand.
Ever since he pushed me away and threw me against a fucking wall.
Ever since that time those bullies were harassing him and he, like, crushed a pipe in his hand. I know!
Yeah, exactly.
Then he had Lex Luthor. I always thought Clark was gay, guys. What's Superman?
You have to do it right now because it's Jesse Eisenberg. So I always thought that Clark was gay.
Like, no, we're talking about Superman. Where were you, Lex? Oh, oh, my bad, guys. Wrong conversation.
Do you guys remember when I was in that zombie movie? Now I'm doing this.
I think the internet would call me, like, a sellout apologist because I'm actually interested. I'm not saying I know it's going to be awesome, but I want to see, like, a trailer. I want to see Batfleck in the suit. I want to hear his bat voice, and I want to see what they're doing with Jesse Eisenberg.
Actually,
I've never pictured him as Lex Luthor, but I'm interested to see where they're going with it.
You know what sold me on Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor? Someone did this like fan.
Oh, the picture?
No, they did a fan a cut of Social Network inside, like as they were. It was Social Network and Now You See Me, and okay. Just his voiceover from like both things.
Now You See Me, which also featured the Hulk.
Yeah, exactly. But they had voiceovers from Now You See Me, but it had like him in the Social Network, and he's sitting in the boardroom, and they cut it up well enough that it actually looked like it could have been part of the sequel. But just his voice and his mannerisms of how dickish he is in Social Network,
it plays off.
Yeah, it just plays off as, hey, oh shit, yeah, that could be Lex Luthor.
You know another thing that kind of sold me? Just the notion that we're not as young as I think we still feel in our heads. So someone kind of pointed out to me, they want an actor probably close in age to Superman because the comics tend to have them both in their like low to mid-30s, roughly contemporary.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I kind of caught myself watching Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this week, and I was talking about how I don't really feel that the Skyward shipping is appropriate, because I was like, she seems to me like she's like 20, and he seems like he's like 36. And I looked online, and the actor's like 32, and I'm like, that's a year older than me. Oh, wait, I'm not that young anymore.
Yeah.
You're not ready for the
end. I probably shouldn't be going after someone like Sky either. But so it's like kind of like, all right, Jesse Eisenberg, he's not exactly a kid, and Superman, you know, like they should be around the same age, so I get that. So then I kind of stopped thinking, like, all the actors in my head who I thought should play Lex were, like, 50.
Exactly.
You know, so then I started kind of opening up a bit.
I'm happy, though, you are, because I'm on the wait-and-see approach, or I'm on the approach, like, too, with Affleck, too. I'm glad you're not one of those people, you know, people, oh, it's Affleck, it's Batman, it's terrible, Daredevil, even, you know.
Yeah, I know, I'm usually like that with, like, I'm usually like that with everything, except for Transformers. I'm like that with Transformers 4. I'm not like that with Turtles. I'm sorry, it does not look good. And I was like that until they started dropping trailers. It's weird. Like, I used to actually, defense isn't the right word, but people were like, oh, it's the alien Turtles. And I was like, Michael Bay's an idiot, and he didn't know what he was talking about. Mm-hmm. Wait until you see a trailer. And then I saw the trailer, and I was like, no, that's dog shit.
You know what's really funny? And well, I'll bring it up in the movie news about. I've got some turtle news that I didn't put in here.
I have to go. There is a package at the door, and I'm also going to reset my router real quick because it's giving me internet issues.
Okay, so while you're doing that, we'll go through.
I'll
some
be back on in like 2 minutes.
All right.
Okay, go ahead.
So we're going to talk about some dead people while Ryan's gone. So we have John Panette. Actually, Ryan probably would have known about this guy too. He was a comic, but what I knew him from more than anything was he was the fat guy from The Punisher with Tom Jane. Mm-hmm. So he died of a pulmonary embolism, which I think is kind of like a heart attack. Not sure. We also had Peter Matheson, American author. I never heard of this first book that they listed. It was called At Play in the Fields of the Lord. But I have heard of The Snow Leopard. It's a big one, I think. But he died of leukemia. Then we have some two really big names that died. First is Mickey Rooney. Mickey Rooney, known from so many films. Most notably, Pete's Dragon. That I can think of off the top of my head. He had a cameo role in the last, the Muppets. Not the Muppets Most Wanted, but the one before. He's so many things that I can't think of right off the top of my head right now.
My favorite Mickey Rooney moment, one of them, is when he's guest starred on The Simpsons. Remember they're doing the sidekick. What was the superhero's name?
Radioactive Man?
Radioactive Man, and was it Atom Boy or whatever, and Bart got casted for it, and they decided not to cast him anymore. So, like, we need a suitable replacement. And Mickey Rooney goes, I got one. And he goes, Jiminy Jillikers, Jiminy Jillikers. He's dressed up as Atom Boy.
Yeah, and that was he actually played that part, right? And like that was actually him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was Mickey Rooney playing Mickey Rooney.
All right. Then, very sad. Almost didn't make it in, but I threw it in there because Tuesday, right after I posted everything, the Ultimate Warrior, also known as
Jim Hellwig, James Hellwig, if you wanted to call him that, until he legally changed his name to Warrior, but yeah. I'll get more into it for my turnbuckle section, but yeah, he was in Scottsdale, Arizona, I believe, in a hotel. He was walking with his wife to the to the airport, more like to the car, and he just collapsed. It was sad. Still don't know what happened, still don't know how it happened, but he was only 54 years old, and it was terrible. But like I said, getting more into it with my turnbuckle thing, it's just a somber feeling after a couple of days when he appeared in the WWE Hall of Fame on Saturday, and then just the day prior he was on Raw delivering one of the most heartfelt speeches. It's terrible. I mean, it's just a sad moment, but Jim Hellwig, aka Ultimate Warrior, 54, Scottsdale, Arizona, you will be missed. And I think Brian's just signed on.
Oh, Ryan just signed on. Yeah, so I think that's it for that. You know, John, I'm not going to do the what if sound.
It's okay.
But you have a what if?
I have a what if. Okay. No, it's. I'll leave this what if for next week because it's I don't know, like just go more on the somber feelings. But I will do jump off on playing favorites because my what if was gonna be it'd give me more to think about.
Hello.
What if Macho Man was still alive, or like how would it with you know with the whole Hall of Fame induction? But my thing, I'll just jump onto a play favorites. What is your favorite underrated Pokemon?
So with Ryan being back, want to start us off?
No.
Favorite underrated Pokemon. That's a tough one.
Probably, to be completely honest, Pidgeotto or Pidgeot.
Hmm. Underrated.
Like, no one would really say take that bird into competition. It really, I think the only, like, early game bird you should bring into a competition is probably Staraptor or the new one, the fire one.
Yeah.
But I've always liked it. It was like my second or third caught Pokemon ever, obviously, because it was Rattata or Pidgey. But it's always been kind of a staple. I've liked it more than Fearow. I've imported it into games where I could import it over maybe that generation's resident bird.
Okay.
I would say my favorite Pokemon of all time, Beedrill, but I've already tooted the Beedrill horn enough that like it was my second Pokemon I ever got just for the fact that when I found out like, oh, I could catch a Weedle in Viridian Forest. Hell yeah, I'm going to do that. But I'll throw this one out there. Bibarel. I always liked the Bidoof Bibarel. I know people don't like the design and think it's goofy or whatever, but I always liked it.
Bidoof!
I always liked it. And I thought like it had decent stats. And I thought if you used Bibarel right, it was actually a good Pokemon. Unfortunately, it, you know, like I said, people didn't like the design, thought it was goofy, and, you know, oh, it's that typical generic normal-type Pokemon you get early in the game, you know, like, it has that stigma for it, and unfortunately it has the HM slave stigma, too, but I thought, I've used it in my original six for my Platinum playthrough, and it was a good, normal/water staple for me, especially I taught it Aqua Tail, and it was awesome.
Well, I'm going to have to say my underrated, Granbull.
Mm.
Just
pre or post-fairy?
Pre. Though post-fairy actually makes it better with some of the fairy moves that you can teach it. But yeah, Granbull was definitely one of those ones where his power kind of, if you trained him right, could overshadow some of the normal elements that got kind of kicked to the curb in the when it first debuted. Because when Granbull first debuted as a Pokemon, like, normal Pokemon were kind of crap, and you didn't actually... Everything, you know, it was weak to everything. Now normal is kind of a legit type.
That's always felt bad, because I always felt normal was like the dread jack of all trades, master of none, because it had no weaknesses besides fighting, but the thing is, it never had any super powerful moves, like, you know, that...
Exactly, but now it's actually...
Well, until they added Stab to, and then that was pretty nice for it, at least.
Yeah.
Like, a Snorlax doing Body Slam would be more effective than a non-normal doing Body Slam.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. That's what I used to do with Bibarel. I'd give it the water moves like Surf, Waterfall, and Aqua Tail. Then I'd just have Curse, and I'd curse like two or three times, beef up its attack. Yeah, sacrifice its speed, but if it hits you, man, it's going to be like a runaway ice cream van, you know?
Yeah.
Right. One thing I liked about normal in general was, this, like, Bibarel is one case, dual types that are part normal.
Yes.
Yeah, you open up a weakness to fighting, but you also get access to those stab normal moves. Like, Pyroar is another one, where it can use, like, Hyper Voice and get stabbed to it, or Hyper Beam even, in addition to just being a fire type.
Okay. Let's move on to Movie-Rama. We actually have... we've already been doing this for almost an hour, so we got to keep this moving along.
Okay.
So, Movie-Rama, let's see. How do you pronounce this name, Ryan? Is it Laird?
I've always just said Laird. Laird, like Lair with a D.
Yeah. So, Peter Laird, one of the co-creators of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, has now seen...
Turtles count it off!
No. Okay. Has now seen the trailer for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And what does he think about it? He hates it.
He was, you know, to be honest, I thought he was actually kind of reserved and mature. I think if you read between the lines, yeah, he hates it.
Yeah.
But his response, he wasn't like an Alan Moore, like, I haven't seen it, I haven't even seen the trailer, I cash the check, and fuck them. He was more like, maybe they did something I'm not, you know, that'll come off better when you have more context, we'll have to see when we see the movie. Still kind of saying, like, I'm going to see the movie, you guys should see the movie. However, I don't really care for this design.
Yeah.
So he's basically cautiously optimistic.
If memory serves...
I think he's more reservedly pessimistic. Okay. But yeah. Yes, you know, so I think he's skirting the same line.
If memory serves me correctly, he was the one that kind of went to bat for everything when the Alien Turtles thing came out. And he was just like, you know, no, they're working with Eastman, and, you know, as much as I've had my fights, there's no way that they're probably, what do you call it, that they're going to be aliens. They're probably going to do something else. Just, you know, you guys gotta calm down and just keep on watching. You'll see. It's not as bad as you think it is.
I don't want to pile onto the Michael Bay hate train, but...
Go ahead, pile on. There's enough.
I mean, like, as soon as we found out he was signing on, I guess, like, this is, you know, you get what you asked for, I guess, you know?
Yeah. Next bit of news. Wreck-It Ralph 2!
Michael Bay, except for the fact that he's rich is all hell and doesn't need anyone's sympathy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't talk on stage.
No, that he can't do. Though, you know what? I don't want to go down as, like, defending Michael Bay, but I do sometimes feel the need to, at least in my own heart. Like, first off, it's just kind of like, if you just go on the internet, it's like, oh, everybody knows Michael Bay is trash. And I'm like, does everybody know that? Because his movies make bank. And personally speaking, I think he's about 50-50. I don't think he's, like, completely terrible. The movies of his that I like, I really like.
Yeah, I'm not.
And he also has a production company that has some movies that people... Like, I don't really hear people trash talk. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre revival. You know, the new Nightmare was generally panned. Friday was kind of, like, middle of the road. Yeah. But, like, it's not like when he produces a movie, people automatically just hate it. But if you just go on, like, a forum and say Michael Bay, it's just...
Well, I bet you nowadays, like, if he did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre now, if it came out now, I bet you it'd be panned.
No, that was didn't he just
He did, though. Like, yeah. There was, like, a third one, like, not that long ago.
The 3D one?
Nobody said shit about it.
Yeah, you're all right.
It was, like, the prequel or whatever.
Yeah.
I actually didn't get to see that one yet, but I don't know, it's weird. I have this is a longer topic that I'm not going to bore everybody with, but fake internet butthurt, I have this theory that there's like 2,000-3,000 just negative people on the internet who convince everyone else that everybody thinks a certain way because they just say the same thing over and over again on every forum they can.
I'm going to mention that for my Ultimate Warrior tribute later, but I know where you're coming from with that, so...
It's like everybody knows that all of the Matrix movies except for the first one are completely hated, and the same with all the Star Wars. Nobody likes the prequels. I'm like, they made a fuck ton of money. And I remember when those movies were new and people came out of theaters, and I remember, like, except for episode 2, people saying generally positive things. But if you go on a forum now, I remember when Batman Forever came out and people kind of liked it. It wasn't as good as Burton, but people kind of liked it. But now, years later, Batman Forever might as well be Batman and Robin.
Okay, well, let's move on. So, as I said, but I don't know if anyone heard, Wreck-It Ralph 2. Yeah.
Is that, like, official?
That is official. It was, as of the Wreck-It Ralph Facebook page, which is owned by Disney, it is official.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay. Yay!
Oh, and my other Ninja Turtles news that I didn't write up here. Two of the roles for Ninja Turtles have changed hands. I don't remember who was playing Leonardo before, but now it's Johnny Knoxville. And instead of Danny Woodburn, who was playing Shredder, the role is now Tony Shalhoub. Because, you know, we needed Jack Jeebs to play another part.
Say that one more time?
Jack Jeebs.
Did you say Shredder or Splinter?
Splinter, sorry.
Do you know...
Okay.
You know who'd be better for Splinter? I'm going for it, Ted. Al Pacino.
Ryan would have to do the...
Did they go to Ken Watanabe and say, can you be Shredder? And he said, no, I am doing Godzilla.
Mm-mm-mm. Probably. It's like, that's what I would do if I was Ken Watanabe. Let's see. Yeah, there's no way I can do it. I would love to see a Splinter as Al Pacino. Ryan should do that one.
Oh, yeah.
No.
What about Shredder as Al Pacino?
I am not a puppet.
What about Shredder as Al Pacino?
I can't do New Shredder because New Shredder apparently created the Turtles, and I don't get it.
I don't know.
How about Shredder as John Travolta? There you go, Ted. That's in your wheelhouse. I mean, Leonardo, come here.
Come here. It's so weird. So weird, Leonardo. You're like my sons, but not really because you're green. It's so weird. All right, moving on. Lord and Miller, the guys who brought you the Lego movie, have a brain on their shoulders because they were offered Ghostbusters 3. And they said, no. Because... We don't need a Ghostbusters 3. Speaking of things that we don't need that are apparently getting sequels, Goonies 2. Yeah, I'm sorry, Goonies 2.
Do the truffle shuffle.
Yeah, the Karate Kid 2, the Jackie Chan version. Oh. Which, you know, I would be perfectly fine if that movie was called Kung Fu Kid. Because there's no karate in it. If there was karate in it, that would be one thing.
Or what if they just renamed the movie Nepotism?
We could name it that. I think that was the subtitle for the one with
After Earth.
Yeah, for After Earth, yeah. After Earth, Nepotism. And then we're also getting, right after the announcement of Mickey Rooney's death, we're getting Pete's Dragon.
It's like, yeah, it's all sad that Mickey Rooney died, but we're going to do a Pete's Dragon reboot, guys.
Yeah. We're going to, you know, one of the main actors from Pete's Dragon died, so we're going to do a remake now. Yeah. So Dexter star Michael C. Hall has been rumored for a while now to be the number one choice for Marvel to play Matt Murdock / Daredevil. And to that he said, please, 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 please. No, seriously, that's basically, it's like, I would love that role. So we might see Michael C. Hall as Daredevil. The blind lawyer from Hell's Kitchen.
Oh, cool.
Yep. And lastly, because Star Wars is apparently still news, Chewbacca is back for Star Wars Episode 7, The Search for More Money. So, yeah. Anybody fans of Chewbacca? Now he's back. Let's get to DVDs and other releases. DVD releases this week. The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug. Smaug, or whatever, however the fuck you pronounce it. Grudge Match, because nobody actually saw it in theaters. August Osage County. And Paranormal Activity, The Marked Ones.
Still making Paranormal Activities?
Yep. Out in the box office this week, we got Rio 2, Oculus, starring Karen Gillian. If she's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy, and she was Amy Pond in on Doctor Who. And then also we have Draft Day, starring Jonathan Kent.
I was watching ESPN this morning, and speaking of Jonathan Kent, he was interviewed about Draft Day, and Costner delivered one of the most awkward interviews ever. Like, he was like kind of out of it, and but not, it was just weird. But.
Well, because he's doing those four westerns in a row that he wants to do. Four westerns in 4 years. Alright, Ryan, you got video games? Or not?
What's a sec.
Okay. Well, I'll go through the video games, and then Ryan can get news. So, for video games, Kinect Rivals for Xbox One. The Wolf of Wall Street. No, sorry. The Wolf Among Us. Episode 3. Titanfall. Trials Frontier. Which I thought Trials was a, what do you call it? It was only for Xbox, but that's on iOS. Disney Magical World for 3DS. Haven't even heard of that one. And that's it. So we'll just, I guess, wait for Ryan to...
On from Tales to
News. For news?
Yeah.
I lost my Smash Brothers Mega Link. Ed, do you know I have anything offhand?
For Smash Brothers, I don't remember what the release date, like the release window was, but they announced Charizard.
We can start with 3DS is coming first in summer, and then Wii U in the fall, was it, or winter?
Something like that. Then we have Charizard and Greninja as playable characters.
Yep.
Man, talk about the Froakie line, huh? Remember when the first three were released, everybody was all, oh man, the Fennec and the Chespin line, that's awesome, man, Froakie looks alright, then everybody realized, holy shit, he's evolving into a ninja, then like...
Yeah.
Yep, so, I think that was about it that I remember.
They talk about online modes, which are, you know, basic modes. They have a code of conduct and a way to kind of rate other players and penalize players who aren't behaving.
So Ryan and I are going to get kicked off in the first week.
I'm going to get kicked off because people are going to assume that I am Ted.
Exactly. And I'm going to kicked off.
Oh, actually, it's not just the Pokemon. There's also Yoshi, Sheik, and Zero Suit Samus are... They're selectable characters, I guess.
Okay.
There aren't any more form changes, so Sheik is a selectable character as opposed to being a transformation mid-battle.
Yeah.
Zero Suit Samus, you know, it's not like before where you did the final smash and then became Zero Suit. Someone has made a portable Nintendo 64.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
It looks, I think, kind of amazing. A little big, but obviously, you know, for
what it does.
Yeah, it has Casey. Hi. No, I'm not doing the video. Casey, you're whining on the air. This is going on a podcast. Mm-hmm. Whole world is going to hear you.
Yeah, that's the way to parent. Shame him into doing what you want him to do.
Yes. Well, he's going to learn today.
Yep.
Disney Infinity is doing the completely expected and bringing in Marvel superheroes.
Which
since
might
they
actually,
own all of that now.
Which might actually get me to buy Disney Infinity.
I kind of feel like we have Marvel games that will scratch that itch.
Yeah, but not the thing of, you know, bringing Captain America to beat the crap out of Lots of Love and Bear or whatever kind of is appealing to me.
My only problem, I guess, is just with the price model of Disney Infinity. Just seeing, you know, I'm not saying it's bad for what it is. Yeah. I'm just saying I don't want to spend that kind of cash on what that is, personally.
So that's why you're whispering and not listening.
That's just me. Oh, actually, my headset fell down a little bit.
Oh, so you weren't whispering, and now Casey wants Disney Infinity.
That landfill dig for the E.T. games, Atari E.T. games, that's actually finally happening. They're going to break open the ground and, I guess, pull those out, which I kind of think is going to signal the end times.
Possibly wasn't. Weren't they put in a Pentecostal star to keep a demon at bay?
You know?
That's what I thought. That's
so why would they? Why would they break that seal?
They need something to fight Godzilla.
It wasn't a test. They were trying to destroy it.
Something like that. Is that all you got for news?
There was something. Oh, well, this isn't news. Oh, my Lord. Hold on a second.
Okay. Well, the other thing is Titanfall has a new download, what do you call it, update. And
which is broken in my Xbox.
Which is broken in Ryan's Xbox.
What is this update?
The update, they had improved matchmaking, and they put it to two of the modes in the multiplayer, and also added a private match setting so that you can go and play with your friends and probably work out team strategies without having to, you know, do it on the fly when you're in a game. Which is, you know, something that nobody ever really thinks about until they have it.
Because I heard that was the complaint where you'd be at a certain level and you'd have to face these a group of like overmatched guys, or you'd be this one decently leveled guy matching up against these guys who are around this level, but unfortunately the other people in your group tend to be, you know, just new to the game. So
yeah.
Awesome. I'm good. I'm glad that they're finally figuring that out. So.
I mean, it works all right. So
Amazon has purchased the Comixology, which is like the most widespread digital comics app.
Was that gasp from Casey intentional?
No, that was Casey shoving papers in my face.
Oh. Okay. So, yeah, they bought...
So, I'm not sure how that impacts Comixology yet. Amazon said they have a long goal of making every person on the planet a comics fan.
Okay.
So, yeah. Also, oh, okay. Is anyone familiar with The Simpsons Tapped Out?
Yes, I've heard of it.
It's, you know, it's a city builder featuring The Simpsons, so it's like fan service of any kind of vill game, basically. Yeah. But with Simpsons fan service. Well, Fox has put out a Family Guy version now, too, but something kind of shady happened. Somebody somewhere let the game launch a little early in New Zealand. This actually isn't that infrequent. Things often... New Zealand is, like, where Apple apps go first, so people will usually, like... People make New Zealand accounts and download apps a little early all the time, especially reviewers. And because they go live, Wednesday night around midnight here in the States, so they can get them, like, a day early from New Zealand. And so this game went up in New Zealand, and people thought it was a soft launch, and downloaded it, and put up some impressions, and, like, streamed it a little on Twitch. And Fox, like, spazzed out because it wasn't supposed to go up that early. And so, rather than admitting their own mistake, I don't think they understood how the App Store works, or how these, you know, how their fan base operates. So they started giving out, they had their legal department start finding everybody who was acknowledging this game's existence or showing footage of it, and handing out cease and desist. They actually shut down some people's, YouTube and Twitch accounts, like, managed to get them pulled.
Wow.
And again, this isn't over, like, your next big exclusive on the Xbox One or PS4, mind you. This is over a freemium phone game. Huh. But, like, every week, every game comes out, most of them launch in New Zealand first, and people download them and start putting impressions up. They don't do embargoes and whatnot. So this was entirely Fox's fault. But they were penalizing their fan base for liking their product. So I kind of urge everyone not to play the new Family Guy game on... Don't even download it to give it a bad review, because a download still puts it high in the charts.
Oops.
Then again, I also think that nobody should really be downloading freemium city builders anyway, because they're a complete waste of everything.
Yeah. Alright.
And that's about it for me.
Alright, well...
Oh, Nintendo is discontinuing... The Wii Pro controller, or Wii Classic controller.
Yeah, so if you need one of those, grab it now.
That's the Wii version, not the Wii U version. I guess notable that, in my personal opinion, the Wii Pro version, we were talking about how many versions of these controllers there are. The Wii Classic Controller Pro, I think, is a very well put together controller, and it's completely compatible with the Wii U, so I would recommend picking one up. Oh, we almost forgot. The Xbox 360 version of Titanfall, I believe, is out.
Yeah, well, I said that.
And, surprisingly, looks kind of awesome. Not as awesome as the Xbox One version, but after playing the Xbox One version, the fact that it looks really good on the 360 is actually kind of impressive.
Yep, especially when it was... When you're looking at the RAM, it plays almost the same.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, obviously, it's a graphical downgrade, and the frame rate's not quite as smooth. But the fact that it is, for the most part, covering most of the same gameplay, like, it's not like, you know, I would almost figure, given the specs of the two systems, it would be like playing Call of Duty and then picking up the DS version.
We also have, in Xbox One, you have a team of 8 grunts that come out randomly. In this one, I hear it's just 4.
Four, yeah.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, there's fewer AI-controlled shenanigans going on.
Yeah. Alright, so, since that's the end of Gaming Corner...
What can I say? What can I do?
before I get to my WrestleMania reactions, I wanted to get into my thing about the Warrior. As ironic as it sounds, before I found out, or before the whole death, I was going to do an appreciation on the Warrior, because the fact I felt that him going into the Hall of Fame was a long time coming. And then, as I was setting stuff up, my friend who I have to watch WrestleMania with, as you people know him as Mr. Marshmallow Jones, informed me that Warrior died. At first, I was like, I don't believe it. And then I looked it up and basically confirmed it when WWE basically confirms, like, oh, wow, this is serious. So I know when it happens with deaths of either it's like musicians or like actors or even the wrestlers, everyone's like, oh, he's my favorite, stuff like that. I'm not going to lie to you. Warrior was never my favorite wrestler. I liked him, but I would never consider him a favorite. I thought he was a very unique character, and he was awesome, but he was never a favorite. So I have two memories of the Warrior. One of them was, I was born in 1986, so I missed out on the majority of the Hulkamania run of the Golden Age of Wrestling. My fond memories of started when I was 4 years old, which happens to be the year of 1990. And the way I talk about wrestling on here is, you'd think my favorite wrestler is Hulk Hogan. Yeah, I love Hogan, but the wrestler that actually got me into wrestling, believe it or not, was Macho Man Randy Savage. And that's another story for another time. But to get back to this, Macho Man got me into wrestling. There was one match, though, that made me a wrestling fan for life. And my dad was a huge wrestling fan. He got WrestleMania 6. And that's the first. WrestleMania 6 will always hold a special place in my heart. That was in 1990 at the Toronto Sky Dome at the time. I remember it. We'd be watching this for, like I said, they, you know, when you're young, you don't remember much things. But that I remember. And it'll always hold a special place. But the match that got me a wrestling fan for life was Hulk Hogan Ultimate Warrior, the main event at WrestleMania 6. And I think the reason why it was the fact that you had these two guys, like Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior, these larger-than-life superstars, these kind of cult of personality, sort of. It was legit, as a kid, these two gods going at it, you know, one-on-one in the ring, and it was awesome. So what upsets me is thinking about that is
about the motorcycle going by.
But no, what upset me is like what Ryan said before with the whole, but you know, it comes into terms with Michael Bay, or you know how people just like to bash him, because bash him with Ultimate Warrior. I felt there was always this smear campaign, even when WWE did their smear campaign, which was the self-destruction of Ultimate Warrior, which is, in my opinion, like I said, I wasn't a I was a fan, but I was never my favorite. It was one of the biggest bullshit art pieces, smear job that somebody ever did on Ultimate Warrior. And I feel like some of these fans who were not of my age around, like, I feel if you're like that age, like 21 and younger, it's implanted, you know, everyone thinks ring work, you know, that, and they see Ultimate Warrior, oh, he's this roid guy, he couldn't work in the ring, and his promos were different. Let me tell you, doing 100 flips, doing these high spots, doing these hardcore shit, it's not everything in wrestling. Storytelling is just an important part of wrestling, and I feel that's where Ultimate Warrior was underrated in, and even and Hulk Hogan. These guys delivered, you know, these favorites of the internet, these darlings, being sarcastic, you know, guys, these little kids who come here and shit on Hogan and Warrior, these guys can't wrestle. Well, you know what? These guys who supposedly can't work in the ring put on an ultimate fucking classic at WrestleMania, and it still holds up to this day. It's not about doing flips. It's not about doing high spots. Like I said, it's storytelling, and those guys, when it's storytelling, those guys got 68,000 people in Toronto that have them eat. They're basically, these fans were eating out of the palm of their fucking hand. Don't sit and tell me ring work is everything. That match proves you flat wrong, and that is the match that made me a fan for life.
Just to go off that, just to prove your point that ring work isn't everything, WrestleMania 20. Rock versus Hogan.
Oh, 18.
Was that 18?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, Yeah, WrestleMania 18. No, you sure?
Yeah, 18.
Okay. WrestleMania 18, Rock versus Hogan. And, you know, skill-wise in the ring, shit.
Oh, but that crowd was, you know, yeah. Ironically enough, that was in the Toronto Sky Dome, too, so.
Yeah, and it was one of those things where the crowd was evenly dispersed between Rock fans and Hogan fans.
The one thing I'll always give Hogan credit for, he can work a crowd better than fucking anybody. He has that psychology packed tight. Perfect example. When I was watching a TNA pay-per-view a couple of years ago, it was Sting Hogan. They were past their prime, and it was in Philly. It was in Smart Mark Town. Everyone's like, "Oh, these old guys, they're going to get booed out the building because Philly, you know, full of those hardcore fans." Cheering, chanting Hogan, doing the things. Hogan fucking worked that crowd, and everyone's like, "Oh, the crowd's going to work them." Nope, Hogan knows what the fuck he's doing. Don't, you know, he has his shit packed down tight.
He
knows
what he's doing. He just doesn't know where he is all the time.
Which leads me back into my second favorite warrior moment that I'll remember. Like I said, I was a Macho Man kid growing up, which led up to their match at WrestleMania 7, which was one people consider one of the great all-time matches, which, ironically enough, or speaking of, a person who, like a lot of these New Age wrestling fans, like to shit on Ultimate Warrior for not having great wrestling matches. Back-to-back years, he stole the show. WrestleMania 7 against Macho Man and WrestleMania 6 against Hogan. Yeah, can't work my ass. But going back to what I was saying, I remember Royal Rumble, watching it, being, you know, kid watching with it. I was a Macho Man guy, and this is when he was doing his whole Macho King gimmick, and he had Sensational Sherry with him. And for months, he was begging Warrior, when he was the champ at the time, for a title shot, and he kept flat-out turning him down. So he was having a match with Sergeant Slaughter at the Rumble. The Warrior was going to put his belt at the on the line. So basically, Sensational Sherry Martel, basically during this a promo segment, basically came out and was trying to seduce Warrior to, "You're going to make your next opponent when you retain against Sergeant Slaughter Macho Man, right?" So Warrior, you know, doing his whole Warrior in Tongues thing, basically flat-out said no. So during the match, Macho Man came out and screwed Warrior out of the belt against Sergeant Slaughter. As a kid at the time, I remember being, my first reaction was, "Oh my god, Macho Man just pissed off the most intense wrestler on the roster right now." Like, Macho Man's intense, but Warrior was like Macho Man on fucking speed. He's gonna kick Macho Man's ass. What is he doing? And, like,
of course, you're using all these words at age 5.
No, not at 5. But, you know, basically what I was thinking was like, "Oh my god, he's going to beat the crap out of Macho Man." So, but, yeah, it's my fond memories of Warrior. Warrior was he was intense, he was unique, you know, and that's at a time where I feel, especially now that they're geared towards kids, I feel if Warrior came now and was at his height, he would be super over now because, you know, he was a larger-than-life comic book character and, you know, and people, like I said, couldn't say he worked in the ring. That match and that retirement match against Macho Man at WrestleMania 7, the psychology was off the charts. Warrior did his finisher, and Macho Man kicked out. Warrior looked at his hands like, "Oh my god, the gods have let me down." Like, that was surreal. Like, I felt it as a kid, and everybody in that arena felt it. So don't tell me Macho Man. Warrior couldn't tell a story. He knew what he was doing in the ring as much as people would never give him credit for. People like the Ric Flairs and, you know, and that. So, with that being said, Warrior dying, it was sad. And he came out on Monday Night Raw the day before he died and delivered a really good promo that now I feel like, oh my god, this is like him saying goodbye to us. Basically, I'm going to say the promo word for word right now, and this is the day before he died. It was like very morbid now, so this is me paraphrasing what he said Monday. "No WWE talent becomes a legend of their own. Every man's heart one day beats its final beat. His lungs breathe their final breath. And if what that man did in his life makes the blood pulse through the body of others and makes them believe deeper in something larger than life, then his essence, his spirit, will be immortalized by the storytellers, by the loyalty, by the memory of those who honor him, and make the man, what the man did, live forever." Then he points to the crowd and goes, you are the legend makers of Ultimate Warrior. In the back, I see many potential legends, some of them with warrior spirits. And you will do the same for them. You will decide if they lived with the passion and intensity, so much so that you will tell you will tell your stories and you will make them legends as well. I'm the Ultimate Warrior, you're the Ultimate Warrior fans, and the spirit of the Ultimate Warrior will run forever. That's a day before he died. Tell me how, like, creepy and surreal that is now, you know? Like,
Yeah, really.
So, RIP Warrior, you're underrated. You never got the credit you deserved. Or, you know, fans of my age demographic will remember you for what you did. These younger fans need, if you got the WWE Network, go out and watch Warrior matches and look at it. And he knows what he's doing. You know, RIP Jim Hellwig, a.k.a. Warrior. You're underrated in my book. So now, with my rant-filled discussion on that, I will talk about the activities that is of WrestleMania 30. And I made a joke on the Sportscast Prime saying three things in my life, streaks I never thought I'd see broken. That was DiMaggio's hit streak, Cal Ripken's consecutive game played, and Undertaker's streak at WrestleMania. Sunday, Undertaker's streak at WrestleMania ended, which shocked me. So, it was weird. My emotions and gambits running through it, which I thought this was a pretty good WrestleMania going up into that match, and then that happened. I just remember I'm watching with Mr. Marshmallow Jones and my brother. My brother doesn't watch wrestling anymore, but we're watching it. So, now Marshmallow Jones is a huge Taker fan. I could take or leave Taker, but I remember as it was happening, Brock Lesnar delivered the third F5 to the Taker, and he covered him, and the ref chanted one, counted 1-2, and the crowd, like, went along 1-2, and they stopped because they figured Taker's gonna kick out, you know? Like, that's just how it is. So, the ref, halfway down to the third count, it clicked in my mind, holy shit, this could end! And I'm like, I basically yelled, no! And then, like, three hit. That was the first time I ever heard the whole crowd, like, packed in the Louisiana Superdome, or Silverdome.
If you're Hulk Hogan.
The whole crowd's like, it's just quiet. Everybody was shocked, like, that they couldn't believe what happened. For a solid minute, everyone's like, what just happened? And then after that minute, everyone's like, boo! But, like, I remember, I was sitting there, Marshmallow Jones, Jaron was sitting there, and my brother were like, What? That just happened? It was a surreal moment, and apparently only four people knew that that was happening. Vince, Taker, Lesnar, and Lesnar's manager, Paul Heyman. Those were the only four people that knew. So if us fans were shocked, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall to see, like, the producers backstage, the wrestlers watching, like, holy shit, that just happened, you know? Which leads me to my WrestleMania theory that I shared with Ted, which I'm glad, because my girlfriend thinks I was thinking too much in depth in this. It was, by the end of the night, we knew Daniel Bryan was going to kind of win the WWE title, or heavyweight title, whatever you want to call it, now that they unify them. Basically, the end game all along was, Batista was coming back, he signed a 2-year contract, this wasn't a Rock or Undertaker or Brock Lesnar contract, him going to be a part-time worker. Batista was legit going to be a full-time worker. And I figured, which everybody figured, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy is coming out this summer. Of course Vince is going to want to put the belt on him. That'd be good press, you know, the guy, you know, who's going to be in Guardians of the Galaxy. So with that said, Batista, I figured, oh, he's coming back. He's going to win the Rumble, and he's probably going to win the belt at the main event at Mania. Something weird happened along the lines. The fans rejected that idea. They booed the hell out of Batista out of the building. Well, when he first came back, he got a relatively good cheer. Then at Royal Rumble, he got booed. Nobody wanted to see it. Nobody wanted to see him walk out with the belt. Nobody wanted to see Randy Orton and Batista main eventing WrestleMania. They wanted to see their guy, which happens to be Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan is not the typical Vince McMahon mold. Vince likes the 6'6", 250-80-pound, you know, kind of roid physique guy, like a Batista, you know, or like a John Cena. Doesn't, you know, which Daniel Bryan's like 5'0", pale, like, you know, he's probably 180 pounds soaking wet. He was put in a weird situation, or put in a situation where he didn't want, like, potentially this whole crowd at, you know, to just turn on this main event. I was looking forward to it personally. I'm like, oh my god, this is going to be an awesome shit show. I can't wait to see people chant like Bautista and like. So Vince's back against the wall, like he had the audible, and basically Daniel Bryan was putting in a match with Triple H at WrestleMania. If he beat Triple H, he the winner of that match was going to go on and to be in the main event, which was going to be a triple threat match then. So we all kind of knew, all right, Daniel Bryan's going to go over and Daniel Bryan's going to win the title. This wasn't Vince's choice. Like I said, he wanted Batista all the time, but the fans gave him no choice. And everybody was waiting. Even me, I wanted to see that moment. I'm like, oh, wow, are they finally going to pull the trigger at Daniel Bryan after 8 months of kind of dicking him around and jerking, you know, him around, like teasing, oh, he might win the belt. Oh, he's not. Oh, he might. Oh, he's not. This storyline's been going on for 8 months. I'm like, oh, are they finally going to do it? Or are they going to jerk us around even more by not? So my theory being that is, I feel Vince, the streak got broken. I feel Vince was like, oh, Daniel Bryan, you can have your moment at WrestleMania, but it's not going to be the moment everybody's going to remember by the end of the night. That's going to be Undertaker's streak. And I feel like he kind of wanted to do that to take the momentum out of Daniel Bryan's thing. Now, I understand it's not his choice. I understand Taker came out and said, no, this was my choice. I wanted to end the streak. Vince had nothing to do with it. The creative team had nothing to do with it. I'm pretty sure at first Vince McMahon was kind of upset. My theory is, like, he was kind of upset that, man, Taker ended the streak. But thinking about the whole Daniel Bryan situation, he's like, all right, now I'm totally down with it. Because it did. After that streak ended, my whole perspective changed that night. It went from Daniel Bryan, oh, I want to see him win, to holy shit, the streak got broken. Which was, I told Ted, I was watching the match. I don't remember anything from that triple threat. Besides that big bump Daniel Bryan took on the announcement on the announce team, and apparently the race car agrees with me too. So, that's what I mean. All I remember is that bump that he took. I don't remember anything else. All I remember is, my God, the streak was broken. And like I said, even at the end of the night, I remember, oh, I'm happy that Daniel Bryan won the belt, but holy shit, Taker's streak got, you know, was broken. That's my opinion on it. That is kind of it, and it did. Like everybody was kind of half-ass cheering in the arena. Everybody's just more shocked at the streak. That's what I feel about it. And my girlfriend says, you're putting too much thought in this. I'm like, no, I wouldn't put it past Vince McMahon. This is the same guy who screwed over Bret Hart legit in Montreal, so I wouldn't put it past anything, you know.
Yeah.
But all in all, with WrestleMania, it was a good show up until that time, which I thought Daniel Bryan Triple H was good. I thought the over-the-top rope Hulk Hogan Battle Royal was good. The Andre the Giant was good. They put Cesaro over. I feel this was a WrestleMania about putting over new stars. I mean, Daniel Bryan got put over in a big way. Cesaro got put over in a big way in Andre the Giant by picking up Big Show legit and throwing him out the ring. Bray Wyatt got put over in a big way. He had a great match. I feel he had a really good match with John Cena. Unfortunately, the ending wasn't what I wanted. Like, it was the same shit Cena went over, but it was good. One of the better Cena matches I could figure in a long time. The Shield went over in a big way. All these young guys got put over. And even the Strength, I kind of feel like, looking, I was upset with the streak, but now I feel with the streak being over, it was kind of symbolic as a changing of the guard. It was the end of an old era. I feel WrestleMania 30 was good, but when we look back at this 5-10 years from now, it's going to be the yeah, but WrestleMania. Like, yeah, Daniel Bryan had his moment, but the streak ended. Yeah, you know, Bray Wyatt had his moment, but Cena won in the end. So I feel it was good and bad. It was a mixed bag of putting over new stars and, you know, missed opportunities. So that's basically me with the turnbuckle.
Okay, and then that would be the end of this week's podcast. So we may or may not have a show next week, guys. Just letting you know. If we can put something together, we will. But if we don't see you next week, we'll see you the week after. And if we don't see you next week, have
in
a happy
Easter. In case we don't see you, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Oh, that was the other thing. We might be getting a Truman Show TV show.
Oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
That was completely random. Sorry. On my part.
Yeah. Truman Show might become a TV show.
An actual Truman Show, if you will. I only want to watch it if it really is the Truman Show.
No, unfortunately.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If there really is just some poor sap we're following around.
Unfortunately not. All right, we'll see you guys at some point. If we don't see you next week, have a happy Easter.
Take it easy, Warriors.
Yeah, happy Easter.
You just listened to a Hybrid Works Network podcast. Don't you feel good about yourself now? No?
Sorry.